Welcome to the Attractions Group Podcast. Alongside Ryan Sir, I'm Don Helbig. This is episode number 93. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm doing amazing. We're recording a little bit early, so the sun's out. So it's not kind of like drabby and stuff like when we normally record, which is around 7 or so p.m. local time here. But we're kicking it off at 5. And the reason for that is we have a special guest, a very special guest. But before we bring on our special guest, let me remind you that you can find us on all your favorite podcast apps, Apple, Google, Spotify, you know the drill, smash that subscribe button there. And we also have a video cast that's on YouTube by searching for the Attractions Group Podcast. So if you're watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe, go to like, drop us a comment. Don, why are we recording early today? What's this special guest that you speak of?
Well, we'd like to welcome to the Attractions Group Podcast, episode number 93. He is the founder and CEO of International Theme Park Services and IAAPA Hall of Famer, former Coney Island, Cincinnati executive and Kings Island executive. You might have also seen him in the movie Roller Coaster. Of course, we're talking about Dennis Spiegel. Dennis, how are you?
I'm good, Don. How are you, Don? How are you, Rye?
Oh, just amazing. I love having celebrities on that were in the movie Roller Coaster.
Well, I'm not sure about the celebrity status, but how about old timer or something like that? Yeah.
It's funny because for those in the Cincinnati area, you know, obviously who Dennis is, even if you're not involved in theme parks, it's because anytime there's a question about the industry, the local news goes to Dennis. So he's always quoted in every newspaper and every, you know, news feed or whatever. And I always assumed it was because you made that cameo in the movie Roller Coaster. I didn't know that you owned a consulting company too. That's very interesting that you've expanded on your role.
Yeah. Well, they never called me back for another movie. So I thought I'd do something else.
Yeah, that's true. I guess it's typecasting. You were typecasted as a GM of a theme park. So you just kind of like, you know, you owned it. I like that.
Well, I think I told you guys maybe the story when they asked me to be in the movie. I said no for months. And then finally I said, what's the line that I would speak in the movie? And they said, it's, would somebody please tell me what's going on around here? Of course, I was running King's Dominion. I said, hell, I say that 30 times a day. So that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, awesome. So Dennis, the reason why you're here, and not just that you're a friend of the podcast, but thank you for appearing, is there's some big news in the industry, and it directly pertains to Cedar Point. And we would really be interested in, taking your perspective on it. But just a week after its much-anticipated public debut, Cedar Point's record-breaking Top Thrill 2 roller coaster has been shut down indefinitely while the ride manufacturer Zamperla completes what the park is calling a mechanical modification. With the level of sophistication and technology evolved, it's not unusual for a new ride to experience issues that lead to downtime. Would you say that this was something that was anticipated from your standpoint, since it is still kind of a prototype?
Well, first of all, it's not unusual. I mean, this happens a lot in the industry. We've seen it at Disney with the Guardians of the Galaxy. We've seen it at Universal with Haggard's motorcycle ride. We've seen it at Six Flags. We've seen it in a lot of parks through the years. And the world we live in today, as we know, is very litigious. And we'll put that aside, that comment aside for a second. But the world we live in is we have to be very responsible to our employees and our guests. And when there is an issue of this type, and I don't think any of us exactly know what that is. They haven't communicated that, but got two good teams working on it, the Cedar Fair team and the Zamperla team. They'll get this fleshed out. They'll get it fixed. They'll get it taken care of. But in today's world, because of the first topic I mentioned, and just being responsible, if you have a level of sophistication in this type of ride that is just a super ride, and you have any type of issue, you want to bring it down, you want to take care of the issue, and you want to get it done before you get into your prime main season. And I think that's what Cedar Fair is doing up at Cedar Point with this ride.
You know, Dennis, it's unclear how long Top Thrill is going to be closed. That might be 2 weeks, 2 months, maybe somewhere in between. But from the park's perspective, how would you handle this from the standpoint of communicating with both the public what's going on and also internally?
Well, transparency, first of all, in Cedar Point and the whole Cedar Fair organization is very good at that. In fact, the industry has become very good at that. They know that transparency is important. Everybody has one of these today. I've had general managers in parks tell me that when a ride gets stuck on an incline or in a loop or something, it's already on television before they even get the call up at their office to tell them what's going on. So transparency has to be with us. I think all of us, and Don, you and I know this, particularly with our backgrounds as deeply as they are in the parks, that they will pull out all stops to, with particularly with the great amount of publicity that has been out there on this ride, being introduced to the public, to get it fixed and get it operating as quickly as possible. And for several reasons, obviously they want to make it right for the public who have been waiting and have paid to come out and see it. And of course, they need to work through the issue in such a way too, that they make sure that it's not just a Band-Aid that they put on it, that they do it the right way, and that they don't have occurrences coming throughout the season.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, piggybacking off of what Don was saying about how do you communicate with the public, I guess the next question would be, what would your strategy be to continue to sell tickets and passes and stuff, knowing that the public knows that the big attraction, the one that they're primarily excited to see, won't be open for the foreseeable future?
Well, since 2020, COVID, which was the worst season in our history and our lives, for those of us who work in the industry, we've never seen anything like that before, and I hope we don't ever again. We know that that people have pent-up demand, and they want to come out, and they want to experience the parks. And there's always going to be some ride or attraction that's not operating in a park. I mean, there are just too many mechanical operations through these big theme parks now. And the way I look at it is, one or two attractions down for either routine maintenance or whatever they're doing doesn't destroy or put a huge chink in the visitation for the guests that day. And we see that at Disney when they've closed down Small World for a while, or the Haunted Mansion, or Pirates. People still come and they have a good time. Now, with that being said, you can go to Cedar Point, you can go to Six Flags, you can go to Busch Gardens, Dollywood, wherever you want to go, something's going to be down. But what you want to do, excuse me, is promote or let the people know in advance that the ride isn't operating, and particularly when you're making a big introduction and a reintroduction of a ride like the Top Thrill.
Yeah, Dennis, Cedar Point, they have several marquee roller coasters that are celebrating anniversaries this year. Blue Streak turned 60. You've got Magnum XL 200 turned 35, Raptor 30. Cedar Point's the roller coaster capital of the world. But they really haven't done anything up to this point to promote these anniversaries of these rides. And, of course, everything is centered around Top Thrill 2 opening. So they really haven't had a chance to do it yet. But if I'm Cedar Point, and I know Top Thrill is going to be down for an extended period, I'm looking to do something with these rides to celebrate their anniversaries, to get positive news stories out there, to keep Cedar Point top of mind and give some people a reason to maybe like rekindle memories of how much fun they had on these coasters, to plan a visit and still come out. What would your thoughts be on that, Dennis?
Well, that's a good question, Don. There's a lot of legacy there. There's a lot of history. when you said the blue streak is 60, I think you said.
Yeah.
I remember being up at Cedar Point when it was just being put out there. And so, yeah, that's an occurrence. And we have to keep in mind now, too, that we're a mature industry. Disney started in 1955, which would be, what, about 69 years ago, I guess, close to it. And Six Flags in Texas was really Disney being the first destination park and Six Flags Texas being the first regional park in 1961. So we have been around a while now, and there are these legacies and these memories that have been built through generations of a lot of people. And I think it's a great idea. I mean, I know that I have taken my children and my grandchildren on rides, and I still ride the ones that I don't have to go around in a circle or make a loop and enjoy them and have a good time and watch them and laugh with them and tell them the stories when I rode it when I was a kid and had a good time. So, there's opportunities there for parks to continue to promote because we are a mature industry now. And I think the parks where they can and they have those types of attractions need to really put that out there for the guests.
So, Dennis, you know, talking about, you know, the Top Thrill 2 and the situation with that now, the park, they did the right call. I think everybody sitting at this virtual table would agree in saying, you know, disclosing that it was going to be closed for an extended period of time. They haven't given us a time period. Likely they don't have that quite yet. But the reasoning they haven't disclosed. And as a result of that, a lot of people I've seen like YouTube videos with people speculating as to what's wrong and so on. Where do you think that they should draw the line between, disclosing information to prevent that and not giving away too much information as a kind of like a nice to know kind of thing? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, again, it comes back to the world we live in, and you need to be transparent, but you don't have to run around in your underwear and show everything and tell everything to the public. That isn't necessary. And that doesn't help a situation, frankly. Not sure it impairs it either, but it's just not necessary is what I would say. So I think there's a fine line between, making the call to shut the ride down is certainly a huge, huge step when you're introducing a new ride like this. And again, as we said, had the publicity that it's had. So it had to be something has to be with the ride that they're just not comfortable with. And I can't say it's a safety issue. I don't know what the issue is. But to have everybody out there speculating and wondering and talking about it and having opining on it, I don't know that does anything. But again, we're a mature industry through our communication system, social media. I see the same types of blogs and comments that you guys see. And some of them I just laugh and scoff at. And then some of them you go, hey, that's a pretty interesting approach or take on a situation. But I don't think it's necessary for a park, absolutely, to communicate everything. They're working on the issue. They've made a call. It's probably no different than an automobile industry that goes through a recall on a car when they have an issue. They tell you there's an issue. It may be brakes, it may be steering, who knows what it may be, but they don't get down into the bearings and the intricacies that really no one really needs to know except the people who are working on it. And you both know that Zamperla and Cedar Fair have pulled out all stops with their teams, brought in the brightest and the people who have been working on this retooling this long period of time to make sure this gets done properly and safely and as quickly as it can.
Yeah, Dennis, because Top Thrill was reimagined from the problem-plagued Top Thrill Dragster, do you think that this indefinite closure becomes a little bit more magnified than it normally would be for a new attraction? And, you know, as you mentioned, that a lot of times with new attractions, there's going to be, you know, those times where it's going to be down a little bit, but because of what it was, do you think that magnifies it?
Well, I think it's that, Don, and I think it's the timing. It's brand new and just really been open a week. I have to, when you ask that question, I'm thinking back, and you'll remember the bat when we had the bat, and this was the first suspended coaster, articulating coaster that went through down where the vortex was at Kings Island, and it really garnered a lot of media of attention. Everybody was waiting for it. We, the management, we were waiting for it. And it wasn't too long then thereafter we had to go back then. The media was different. We had all these billboards around, and then we had to go around and snipe them, put a banner over it and say the bat closed. And we didn't know how long it was going to be closed. And we worked with Aero Development on that ride through the engineering issues and working to get it right. And we felt very comfortable that it was ready, brought it back, and the bat is back. And I can't remember how long it was, a week or two after that, the thing went down again. Then we had to snipe it again. The bat is closed. So you do what you have to do. Fortunately today, it's a little easier to the public via social media than it was back then, sniping billboards. But you're still can be a little bit embarrassing. But as we said at the outset of the show here, it was the right call. So they're going to get it right.
Yeah, I think they will too. So it's just a matter of patience. So let me ask you this, knowing how these things work, as far as, I hate to bring this up as the first example, but if something were to happen on a coaster, you know, the park blames the manufacturer blames the park. Because of reasons like that, I was personally shocked that they used a different manufacturer, especially Zamperla, for this reimagine. Were you surprised by that, or did you think that this was on the horizon the whole time?
No, I didn't know it was on the horizon, and I was a little surprised. But as we know, Zamperla is a very experienced company in this area, and they have done other retoolings throughout our industry, and it has been done before where other companies have been brought in to work with another manufacturer's ride on renovation or other aspects that needed to be done. So I can guarantee you Cedar Fair as a company had to feel ultra comfortable with making that decision because they knew then and they know now the attention that roller coaster would get no matter what happened, good or bad. So it just wasn't, I'm sure, a flip of the coin and saying, oh, it's Zamperla. It was, there had to be a lot of forethought on the engineering and redesign issues that they had to work through. And they had to feel comfortable with that before they made that decision. I can assure you it wasn't made on cost savings.
Yeah, Dennis, when you look at Top Thrill 2, when it opened, rave reviews, everybody loved it. It seemed like, you know, this is going to be a game changer. And, you know, once it reopens, I feel it's going to get right back on track with that. But, you know, what were you hearing about it after it opened? You know, just the different reviews and the discussion.
You mean reopen?
When it reopened, you know, a couple weeks ago, and then, you know, just off the charts with, you know, just the rider reaction. Everybody, you know, loved it. Yeah. It seemed like it was going to be a game changer in terms of, you know, what's really a thrill ride. Everything else was going to seem like a carousel next to this. But once it reopens again, you know, it's going to get back to that level. But based on what you saw and people you've talked with in the industry, you know, was it even better than maybe you thought the feedback was going to be?
Well, certainly the early reviews that we saw for that week or so, however many days it was, were very good. I really only saw one comment. I'm not sure where I read it. I'm, you know, like you guys, I read tons of stuff every day. Could have been in the ITPS news for all I know. But one rider had said that they felt a shimmy in the ride and a vibration. Didn't think a lot about it, but acknowledged that they felt that. Okay, well, that, who knows? I don't know whether that's true, false, fact, or fiction. But the majority, when I say majority, everything I read, heard, I had a couple of friends from Cincinnati who went up and wrote it. They said it was just off the charts. It's just amazing. And hard to find anything more thrilling than that ride in our industry anywhere. So it was good. It was getting good marks, high marks.
So Dennis, assuming that, you know, this, whatever is going on right now ends up okay, and I think we're all pretty confident that it will, what do you think that Top Thrill 2 means for the future of Zamperla?
Well, I remember when I was running parks and Zamperla only made kiddie rides. Yeah. And I have watched them develop and evolve through the years into this realm that they're currently in. And they, as you both know, they make some wonderful rides, some exciting rides. But yeah, I think it's just a, if you go back to their early days, I think they were making, they might've been like Mach. They were making carnival wagons and just tiny, tiny things. So as the generations come through the family, which Zamperla certainly has, they have grown, and not only grown in size, but they've evolved technologically and from an engineering standpoint, and have become a very responsible and a reliable company in this area of the mega coasters, the giga coasters, the super coasters, whatever you want to call them. So, yeah, it's this will be an important I don't want to say thing, but an important approach that they have to take and make correct as they evolve and continue to design and sell and engineer bigger and more coasters.
Now, Dennis, say they get the solve, they go through all the tests and the cycles, and everybody signs off and it's ready to go again. Do you open it right up? Or would you have a little bit of maybe, you know, an abundance of caution and give it even a little bit more time and maybe, you know, take another week, 2 weeks of just testing it just to make sure, so you don't have a situation where you reopen it and then again in 4 or 5 days it has to go down again?
Well, if I was running the park or I was running Cedar Fair, I did not want to put the bat is back and then have to snipe a few right. days later and say the bat is closed. So we've been through that. We know what that's like. So yeah, I think they'll have a shakeout period. And fortunately for them, as you guys know, it's early enough in the season. I mean, it's just now, we're just getting started, literally just getting started, that they have this shakeout time, whatever we want to call it, the grace period, to work on these kinds of issues when they do come up. And we know the season doesn't kick in with the masses for quite a few more weeks. So yeah, I would have a workout period with all the issues that they're working on now on the table, and monitoring each one to see how it is, and be testing with the weights and with the people. Maybe not immediately public, but the designers and engineers.
Dennis, we've floated this question for months now, and I'm pretty sure we asked you the first time we had you on, but I think the question is more relevant than ever today, given the news. Who do you think has more at risk with Top Thrill 2, Zamperla or Cedar Point?
I think the guy who painted it, the guy who planted the bushes around it, the first people who put the steps in. If there's an issue, everybody gets sued, unfortunately, in our world of theme parks. As you know, when there is an issue in the theme park industry, and as I always like to say, stubbing the toe is too much, but we get the numerically, actuarially, a theme park has been shown to be the safest place on the planet because of all the inspections by the parks, by third parties, by insurance companies, et cetera, states, federal levels, even in some cases. but if there is an issue, we get the sensationalism of an airline crash. And that's understandable because people come to an amusement park, a theme park, to have fun. People get on an airplane to go to point A to point B. They don't expect to have a problem. But we have to be very cognizant of that in our industry. And the operator and the designer of the ride, if there is an issue, they'll all be brought into this. And that's what they're doing now. They're preventing and taking all the steps necessary to make sure that issue doesn't occur. So I wouldn't rush it a bit. If it's 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or 4 weeks, or 5 weeks, that's what it takes. Quite frankly, if I was running the company and somebody said, you know, it's not ready this season, we need more time, it wouldn't operate. And I think that's the responsibility that those two companies would come together and have to say, let's hold. They're not going to rush it.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a tough decision, but it would also be the right decision to make. And, you know, let's put ourselves in Cedar Point shoes. You know, right now, a lot of disappointment, I guess, that we're planning to visit, you know, between, you know, now, maybe through Memorial Day weekend, during the period that we're pretty sure it'll be down. But they can't really do anything, you know, post on social media or anything, no matter what the topic is, without it just, you know, being peppered with, you know, what's going on with Top Thrill 2, what's going on sure. with Top Thrill 2. And it kind of reminds me of, you know, my time at Kings Island when Son of Beast was closed, and how many times, no matter how many ways you put it out there or how you stated it, you know, that it wasn't going to operate, and we'll have more information, you know, we'll let you know, that people are still going to keep asking the same questions over and over again. So if you're Cedar Point, you need a lot of patience there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And keep in mind, Cedar Point's been through that with the Son of Beast. As you know, they inherited that problem from was a Paramount, Don, that they
put it in, yep.
Sequency, yeah. And that, as I have said, and maybe even said to you guys, that's, to me, the classic example of bigger is not better. And they couldn't make it right. They had issue after issue, as you know, you were there. And finally, what did they do? They bulldozed it. They pulled the plug. And that was tens of millions of dollars that just went away in a couple of hours. But it was the right decision, and that's what you do. That's not the case with this ride, I really don't believe. There's some issues. They'll get them worked out. But the Son of Beast, you know, when I went out, I think, I can't remember, it was Tim Fisher or Al Weber who was running the park. They asked me to come out and ride it. We were looking at all the materials and structures and everything. Somebody told me if you measured, took all the board feet in the Son of Beast and stretched it out, it would reach from Cincinnati to New Jersey. And I thought, that's a hell of a lot of lumber and a big ride. And, but that's kind of a funny issue, but bigger is not always better, but I think this ride, we have the engineering capability now to design these rides. In fact, we have more capability, design capability, than the human body will allow us to do on these rides. At some point, I hope before we hang up here tonight, we can talk about, I'm a confirmed believer, I've said this for 10 years, that in my lifetime, we will see a 1,000-foot high roller coaster. And I believe that. I mean, let's look at this coaster, Kingda Ka, and some of the other ones that are out there. So we have that design capacity. What do you need? You need space, et cetera, to facilitate materials, but it's going to happen.
So, you know, it seems like late 90s, early 2000s, you know, the time period, there was what they called the coaster wars, where everyone was building taller and faster. And that was what the marketing was based off of. But it seems like, with the exception of that outlier in Saudi Arabia, a lot of people have pulled back from that. Do you think that, like, in today's market, a 1,000-foot tall coaster would have a market? Or do you think that it would be one of those things where it would, like, probably appeal to such a small niche of thrill seekers that it would be difficult to justify the cost on something like that?
I'm going to answer that a couple of different ways, because I wanted to talk to you guys about this, because I really believe it'll happen. I think we have the capability. Going to be expensive. Going to need a lot of space. And it's going to have somebody with deep, deep pockets. The companies are there that could engineer these, the B&Ms and the Intamins and the Premier Rides and Zampertles. The companies could do this. Where could that happen? Kind of answers part of your question, Ryan. It'll be the Middle East. We see what's going on over there. They're trying to build Orlando in 5 years, which has taken Orlando 55 years to build. And they rushed Dubai. They rushed Qatar. Abu Dhabi has done well with Yas Island and some of the other attractions. Ferrari Park was vacant for many years over there, and all the millions and millions of hundreds of millions they spent on that. So with that kind of ground laying, they're the ones who will do this because they have a desert that stretches for hundreds of miles. Do you need that for a 1,000-foot coaster? No, but you're not going to put that in Cedar Point or Six Flags or Dollywood or any of the parks that we know, because the spatial issues are not there. But they could do something like this. And why would they do it? Because they will, and they can. And that would be my prediction, that our first 1,000-foot roller coaster will be over in the Middle East, probably in Saudi Arabia. After, what's the name of the new one, Ryan? I forgot.
Falcon's Flight is the name of the new one. Falcon's Flight.
And how fast does it go?
I didn't know there would be a quiz today, but I can look it up.
I think it's 110 or 20 miles an hour.
Well, let's pull up the statistics on this, because it is interesting. So this is in Six Flags Qiddiya, where, mm-hmm. So for anyone who doesn't know, Six Flags essentially licensed their name. They have very little to do with this park itself, from what I understand. Maybe you can confirm or deny that.
That's true. That's
okay. Basically it. So let's...
Six Flags only built three parks. They built Texas, Georgia, and St. Louis. Everything else they acquired. And The last park they built was... St. Louis opened in 71, I believe it was, if my memory serves. Okay. What's your stats say there?
So this is what we get. This is from rcdb.com, which is the Encyclopedia Britannica of roller coasters. Okay. So length, 13,943.6 feet. Elevation 639.8 feet. I'm guessing it's elevation because the highest point is not the first hill. It drops off of a
right.
Bridge. So 519 foot drop, speed of 155.3 miles per hour, and it does have an LSM launch. So
I was off on the speed. That's what I drive usually in my Corvettes. I'm at usually about 155 coming to work and not quite that fast going home. But
I would rush home, but like, you know, take your time going to work. But yeah, so it's obviously this is a monstrosity. These are all concept photos and stuff, but this right here. So for those of you who are audio listeners, we're looking at the camel hump and this is the 500 something foot tall section, but right. It does kind of pose the question of, first of all, it'll be very interesting to see. It's Intamin building this thing, and Intamin is the risk taker in the industry. Still is, you know. But what kind of maintenance do you have to have on these trains to go that fast and that far and that high? Like, that's the real question with this, you know?
Well, I think you're getting in when you start doing this, okay, longer, higher, faster, and you're right, we went through that armaments period. And I want to answer your question, but I want to say one other thing. I remember when King Ka was introduced, and that was a very expensive roller coaster for Six Flags at Great Adventure. And what's the height on that one? Do you remember, Don?
King Ka is 456 feet.
People at that time, now this is the important part of the story. They spent a lot of demolition money and then construction to put that ride in, buy it, of course, engineered, etc. And their attendance that year didn't increase 1%.
Yeah.
And we had gone through in the industry, I remember this quite well, we had gone through a period of longer, higher, faster, boom, 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 push it, push it, push it. And you know what? People got tired of it. They were tired of it. And I think they voted with their feet at that ride, King Ka. So now come back to your... Put that up, that slide up again, if we would, Rye.
I talk about the Falcon one.
Yeah, Flight of Falcon. I think what I was going to say to you is, answer your question, maintenance, etc. You're really getting into the world of almost aeronautics, where a set of wheels can only land on a 747 or whatever the big one is now, so many times, where a such can only do so much, so many times.
Yeah.
It's not going to be we've got this kind of latitude and we've got this kind of, we'll be fine for another. It'll be, you do it 32 times and that's it. And everything gets changed out. Now, I don't know if it's 32 or 52 or 152, but I think we enter that world of, there will be such precise calls on the maintenance and change out of certain issues that are germane to that ride or a ride. That's just where we're heading because of the experience and the extremes.
Absolutely.
And I also think that at some point people are going to say, I'm not going to ride that damn thing. That's enough.
That was my concern because, you know, a 1,000-foot coaster, this one concerns me as well, because if this were somewhere, if like, let's say this was in LA, Chicago, New York City, London, somewhere that draws a lot of people anyway, there might be enough people out there to justify this. Enough people would travel to that place to ride that coaster or enough people in the area. But when we're talking about drawing people directly with the ride to, especially somewhere like Saudi Arabia, where a lot of the world won't go there. It makes me wonder if this is kind of like, that's too big. And if the market will be incredibly slim for a very expensive ride. I don't even know how much this costs. Like, I don't know if they've released figures, but
I've never heard a figure on it.
Yeah. It makes me wonder if I honestly think that it's one of those things where it's, they're trying to draw attention to themselves. It's probably a PR stunt for the whole country, you know, that sort of thing. But as far as making its money back, I really have my doubts. I almost wonder if it's not designed to do that. If this is 100,
if you look at the parks that have opened up over in that part of the world, frankly, you look at Motion Gate, Bollywood, and some of the others that opened up. I think the company's Dubai Resorts, they've never made any money. And they were too large of an investment in that market because the markets didn't have the infrastructure and support they needed in the area. And that's everything from roads and retail and gas stations, et cetera, hotels, to the tourism. People who went to Dubai, we did a study there for a company once. They go there to shop. You go to the Dubai Shopping Center on a Friday night, there's 250,000 people there. Now, people have gone to the parks and they're building that, but it takes a long time to, as you say, to build to a level to pay that off. And somebody over there will build the 1,000-foot coaster to have the marquee and the name that we've got the biggest in the world. And that's just what you're dealing with over in that part of the world. And that's why you have this ride that we're talking about.
Absolutely.
All right, well, Dennis, switching gears, Memorial Day weekend just around the corner. What's your prediction on how the industry is going to perform this summer?
Well, we watch it very carefully. I'm called by the investment community. I did two calls today with them, just looking at things and wanting to see how it is. Got a lot of things that are affecting us right now. We've had lousy weather to kind of start out. We've had tornadoes. We've had floods. Rain, of course, to go with the floods and the tornadoes. And we've got other issues that we're watching very carefully. The things that are foremost, but like the election. There always is, when there's an election year, you get a wiggle in attendance in parks because of the craziness that goes on in our elections. We look at the capital, the CapEx, as we all know. CapEx is what drives repeat visitation, and we live on repeat visitation in the regional parks and in the destinations as well. So you've got some hits and misses in the capital sides of the equation. I think, Don, probably some of the first quarter numbers are already out, and we pretty much hit those right on the nose. Going to be flat to down a little bit. And I think that our season is going to hinge on a lot of economy this year. It's going to be gasoline for the last 2 years really didn't affect us, even when it was expensive. I think this year gas prices will have an impact on the industry. So we're watching the gas prices, the food, and the things that we buy every day. You're hearing a lot more about that right now. We're seeing restaurants start to dumb down a little bit. You're seeing things like Red Lobster on the verge of a bankruptcy, just having closed 48 stores, I think, the other day in Florida. And it wasn't because of they bought too much shrimp. It's other issues. Economic issues and things that probably were internal to our company. So we kind of watch a lot of stuff. I think this season we're flat to up 1.5 to 2% probably. And that's with all things being good. And that's not having any crazy, crazy more weather and tornadoes and things. You got to remember when you have those kind of hurricanes and tornadoes, those affect people not just short term, But those are long-term kind of issues because you've had great loss, personal loss that has to be replaced, effects, etc. You got to kind of build that pyramid of how you're looking at the season stone by stone. And I don't think we're down, but I don't think we're up with huge numbers either. So that's kind of where I'm looking right now.
All right.
So Dennis, you were, as far as like the individual park experience goes, you started at Coney Island, which was a ticket based thing, and Kings Island was pay one price and Kings Dominion was pay one price. So one of the big differences was that with Coney Island, you could bring in your own food. And then obviously that changed with Kings Island. So my question for you, since you've been exposed to this quite a bit, is a hot dog a sandwich?
That's funny. I didn't think you were going there.
I didn't either.
Yeah, I think a hot dog is a grab and go. It's a sandwich. You can pick it up and eat it and still walk around and get in line and enjoy something. So
yeah, I think if it's on bread, it's a sandwich.
That's right. It's the one thing that did happen. If you go back to 2007 and 2008, and this had happened earlier than that as well, and you talk about food, you look at games and food and merch, people were, Don, you may remember this, there were as many people eating out of the trunk in the parking lots at Kings Island as there was inside between 12 and 2. Because they just couldn't afford it. They had to sacrifice. And they stopped playing the games. The games have never come back to the level they were. So we do go through these ups and downs. Food, on the other hand, did come back strong because you're there and you're kind of captive, if you will, and you've got to eat and you've got to drink, but you don't have to play a game. You don't have to buy a tchotchke, a salt and pepper shaker, or an invisible dog leash or whatever you're selling this year. But so we have to monitor those things as well and be judicious in the pricing, both at the front gate and internally on the F&B items. And I think we're at a point too, where when we came back after 20 and 21 saw that great exposure of people coming back with pent-up demand, they were buying anything at any price almost. Well, there was a lot of gouging going on from big to small. I think those days are gone for a few years now, so we're not going to see anything like that. So people are looking for a good, I call it price-value relationship, something, fair price for a good portion of what they're getting, food and drink. So we're watching that this season, too. I think pricing is one of our biggest issues we have to deal with.
Well, Dennis, great as always having you on the Attractions Group podcast. Appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's always good to be with you and Ryan, and happy to do it again. Let's have some fun. There's a billion topics we could talk about, and this will be a fun one to go back and look at and see how closely we were on the issues at hand. And it's not going to take us long to be able to ferret that out.
Yeah, we can do an episode called "Is It a Sandwich?" and we'll just list different food items that involve bread and different carbohydrates, and we'll decide, like, is a Hot Pocket a sandwich? Like, if the bread consumes the entire innards, is that considered a sandwich, or is that a non-sugary pastry?
I don't know. I just heard the other day the Earl of Sandwich was a great gambler, and he didn't want to get up from the gambling table, and he decided to eat his lunch, just put it between two pieces of bread and bring it to me. So anything that's kind of between two pieces of bread or a bun, I kind of consider it a sandwich. So, and anything in a cup, I call it a drink. So.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks again, Dennis. Make sure that you check out, what's your website again for International Theme Park Services?
www.innertheme.com.
Yeah, innertheme.com, and make sure that you subscribe to his newsletter where I've subscribed to your newsletter for probably a decade, maybe more than that now. And
We've done it now 27 years, Ryan. You should tell your listeners and viewers, it's free. We don't charge for it. And it's read by everybody from the top to the bottom in the industry. I get a comment on it two or three a week that, oh, gee whiz, I come in, get my coffee or my tea, and I open up the ITPS newsletter to see what's going on. And quite frankly, that's what I do.
So it's just a fantastic source for news. So Dennis, thank you once again for being on the show. We really appreciate it. Stick around. We got the Pick Six coming up next.